I just want to mention, first of all, for the sake of accuracy, today is Monday, November 30th, 2015. A beautiful Monday morning in Yerushalayim. We hope it'll be a day with only good news. I say hello to the students in front of me, and a bigger hello to the many that are listening across the widespread Jewish world. I just want to mention, next week there is a shiur on Monday. There is no shiur Sunday, it's candle lighting. And the week afterwards, there's no shiur Sunday and Monday, because that officially the kollel is off on vacation. And then we pick up again normal into January. Okay. Danny, I have for you what you want. Give it to Sherry to type properly, and that should solve the problem, I trust. First of all, in relation to certain emails I got in things that I said in the past, so he spoke about the Rebbe and the innovation of Kol Ein Vabat Madlika Neirat Shabbat. So I'm very thankful to a Talmud listening who sent me a reference to my childhood bosom buddy and friend until today, a Gadol B'Yisrael, Reb Heshuv Shechta. And if you look into one of his volumes, Peninei Harav, that volume was published, I can give you the year, 2001. And if you go to page 62... right at the start of the page, he talks about Hadlakat Neirat B'chol Shabbat, and he says the Lubavitcher Rebbe gave a drasha how important it is for women to light Shabbos candles, and a lot of the Litvakim were critical, and one of the Talmidim asked Morenu Rabbeinu Rav Soloveitchik, yes, Rabbi Shechter's Rebbe, my Rebbe, what's your opinion, Rebbe? And he said, what's good news? What is everyone getting excited about? He says, that was the minig in Europe, even in my town where I grew up. And he says, everyone had their daughters lighting candles. There's another source to this that Rabbi Soloveitchik was asked. This already is citing Rabbi Yehuda Krinsky, who was one of the Rebbe's three main gabayim after Rabbi Chodakov passed on. And Rabbi Krinsky was a graduate of Maimonides. He was a Boston product, and his father was a shaykhet who worked for the Rav, and he was very close to the Rav. And he asked the Rav about the candle lighting ceremony that the Rebbe had introduced, and the Rav said it was the custom in Brisk for young girls to light candles. However, he did not know if they began at the age of 3 or later. There's one other interesting point here. And this is Rabbi Krinsky speaking. I was told by someone who was in the synagogue with Rabbi Soloveitchik in the days following the Rebbe's heart attack in 1977 that Rabbi Soloveitchik once began crying while davening. Someone asked him, Rebbe, what happened? And he responded, he had heard news of the Rebbe's condition and said, quote, I can't envision a world without the Lubavitcher Rebbe. So I think that's a fascinating comment, continuing with the campaign calling Vabat Matlikan Neirat Shabbat, notwithstanding the fact that Rabbi Ovadia was opposed, Brachot Lebatala, and all that goes with it. I also want to mention that I had said in class that, in my humble opinion, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the seventh Rebbe, was the greatest Zionist in the world. And of course, this went against Lubavitch tradition, and everyone knows that in the past, Lubavitch was very strongly opposed to Zionism and all that goes with it. And one second, I don't know why someone played with these papers and didn't put them back properly. But so people wrote in, no, what are you talking about? Oh, this song gave me left there. Okay, that has to be Yomo at work. And people wrote in to me that the Rebbe was very opposed that to Zionism. And the Rebbe told someone, thank God the Satmar Rebbe is busy fighting Zionism. It leaves me time to do Kirov. And someone sent me in a whole article in a Messianic publication great Mashiach, Rabbi Tzvi Lieker, my dear student. So I, Messianic publication, I have to take with a grain of salt, but be it as it may, all of you are absolutely correct. It nevertheless doesn't contradict one iota of what your humble servant said. Jay, let me take you back in history. A guy named Rakefet gave 6 lectures in the Kollel, 9 hours worth, recorded, sold afterwards by the OU, on the Rav and religious Zionism. Can I ask this erudite audience, who gave the most extreme Agudah talk that was ever given in the United States of America? And by the way, you can ask the present Agudah leaders. The Novominsky Rebbe is an intellectually honest person. He will tell you that talk is even more extreme than any Agudah leader would give today. Donnie, the name of the person who gave the most extreme Agudah talk ever heard in the United States of America, was Moriah Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Where did he give it? No, were you alive in 1940 at the Agudat Yisrael Convention? Why did he give it? No, the Chesped for Rabbi Chaim Moisek Rezhinsky. Donnie, if you don't know that talk, the difference between the Choshen Mishpat and the Tzitz, you do not know how to breathe air. So you better make it your business to get to Rakefet's lecture and then go back to the source. And boy, if you believe that lecture, Shalom, that's your name, Shalom, right? I got it right. If you believe that lecture, word by word, you are an Agudist to the 20th power, not the second power. Tell me, didn't Rabbi Soloveitchik change his mind? My dear friends, students, colleagues, don't quote to me. We all go through periods in our life, but we're talking about Ora, when you mature and hit the area of Mishle, Moriah Rebbe, no one has more influence on the Zionist world than the famous talk that the Rav gave in 56, where myself and my wife were both in the audience, Kol Dodi Do Fake. Wow. Yes, doesn't contradict that he gave a hesped in 41, but a World War II happened, the whole world changed. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, absolutely, I'll agree. He was at me to Satmarov for Zionism. He knows what his father-in-law felt about Zionism. He knows what his Reb Shalom Dov Ber, the fifth Rebbe, felt about Zionism. But when it came, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the Tachlis, in Rakefet's opinion, although he didn't sing HaTikvah, I'm not changing history, I'm not changing the facts, but he was the most greatest Zionist in the world, the way I view it. Wow. Had the state of Israel only listened to the Rebbe, we wouldn't have many of the problems we have today. We wouldn't have all the debts, we wouldn't have Oslo, we wouldn't have the heritage of Rabin. What you don't know, I mean, those of you, Charlie, you're here for a few years already, you understand what I'm saying. Mihu Yehudi, had they listened to the Rebbe back in the early 70s, and I was smart enough then, with all my Mizrahi inclinations, to say that Mizrahi is totally wrong, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe is 100% right. And subsequently, that statement was proven absolutely correct. So I stand on what I said. Okay. We finished out last week the entire question of women and approach to women. I ended off the class, I started the class with that sheet that came out of Shari Chesed. And you can weigh the Rebbe. And it's an interesting question. If a girl came to you, a graduate of Beit Chana is the Chabad school, high school, right? It's still there, Beit Chana. I know when I came in Aliyah, a lot of Americans sent their children to Beit Chana because they felt that the Beis Yaakov was too right-wing, too Haredi, not like Beit Yaakov in Baltimore at the time or Beit Yaakov in New York. And they sent them to Beit Chana. They felt that the Mizrahi educational system was not frum enough. The kids were not frum enough. Beit Chana was the perfect choice. So imagine a girl comes to you from Beit Yaakov, from Beit Chana, and she's finished with honors, and she's a frum girl, and apropos of what we spoke about yesterday, she's dressed bitzniut, and she says to you, I'd like to go to medical school. I really think I can be a wonderful doctor, be gomel chesed, I'd like to be an obstetrician. No, are you going to encourage her or discourage her? And you see the difference? I would believe, Ayon, that the Rebbe would say to her, you're really inclined that way, you really feel that way, you have that ability, go on to become the greatest obstetrician in the world, you should treat. And imagine women can go to a female doctor. My wife only goes to female doctors today, and she even a dentist. She goes to a sister-in-law of a student of mine, who works for my nephew. She says he only wants a female physician or dentist. You have today top doctors, women it's a fabulous profession for women because they can adjust hours, they can work less when they have children and more when the children are older. Would you encourage or would you discourage? And this is an open, interesting question, but you saw what they wrote in Shari Chesed. Now, for them it was a tragedy if a woman wants to study medicine. Then we went on to lamplighters. And then we came to the Rebbe's definition of lamplighters. Yomo's giving a shiur today and he's talking about lamplighters. So it evidently had, it caught his attention. Natan Cohn. Then we went on to the whole question, what is the heart of the Rebbe's message? And Yitzchak, you missed very important comments before, pick it up on the tape. Then we went into the heart of the Rebbe's message, and today's shiur will be built upon last week. And what I showed you last week was two Medrash Rabbis, that it took seven terrible generations for the Shechina to depart from us, and it took seven good generations to bring the Shechina back. And then I quoted to you the Medrash and all the sources, Shalom, I gave last week. We assumed that the tapes are working. Okay. And you left this for me. And you confused me because I thought I had something that I had to... You didn't leave this for me. I don't know, magic papers got here with the Chatam Sofer. All right, I'll look at it later. Maybe it's not meant for me. Okay. Maybe it's not meant for me. Okay. So we quoted a medrash, and a very important medrash. Kol hashviyin chavivin la'olam. I again repeat these words. Kol hashviyin, whoever is the seventh, is dear to the world. And this explained the Rebbe, that we're now in the seventh generation, he's the seventh Rebbe, God has absconded, but now we have to finish the task of bringing him back, what we spoke about weeks ago, Dira B'tachtonim. Yisham, you heard those lectures, right? Because these are, believe me, if I'd be sitting in front of the Rebbe and he would say it, I wouldn't understand one word, but I explained it. I went into detail. Dira B'tachtonim, we have to bring God back. And everyone listened to last week's lecture, and tell me, you accept what I said? Morty, you have one daughter that has many children, many grandchildren, more than seven, am I correct? Tell me, the seventh one, did you give him special gifts when he was born? Did you say he's number seven? Did you say he deserves seven crowns in contradistinction to the others? I mean, what is this Medrash talking about? Just because you're seven? All right. This is the seventh year that Natan has studied Tanya. So this year he's dancing on the roof of Gurs. This is going to be a fabulous year for me, my seventh year. Graduate school. How many years was I in graduate school? Let me just make the cheshbon. I graduated college 59, and I got my doctorate, actually completed everything 66. I think I was awarded the degree as of January 67. 7 years later. So I come to the graduation and I say, I quote, All the sevens are beloved by God. This is the seventh year since I got my bachelor's. I'm now getting my doctorate. I'm better than you. I'm smarter than you. My doctorate is more fabulous than you. I just looked, by the way, at my doctorate this morning. I can't even lift it up today. If you know what a doctorate was like then, and typed and bound. I had well over 500 pages. I can't even lift it up already, Baruch Hashem. So it's a tremendous question. And I want to tell you, the Rebbe struggled with this question. How do you explain it? Here he's coming to Hasidim. We are the seventh. You are the seventh. I am the seventh. This is the seventh generation. We have to do. We have to accomplish. And there is little Natan Cohn and little Donny Kaplan sitting there. What does the Rebbe want from me? Just because I'm in the seventh generation, this is by chance. By chance. Okay. And at the end of the shiur last week, and we'll let the question hang for a few minutes, at the end of the shiur last week, I introduced you to a very, very good volume, Hashvi'i. It's a doctorate at Bar Ilan. It's by Yitzchak Kreuz, who himself, I understand, is a professor at Bar Ilan, but he's also a Chabad Chassid. And his story, if you recall, I ended off the class and I told you a similar story to my own life, that I went into the Bernard Rebel Graduate School. I went to Bernie Lander, Dr. Lander, the dean of the graduate school, or the director. I don't think they called him dean yet. The dean title came only later. The director of the graduate school. I came in with my own topic, the Netziv, and 2 weeks later, the graduate school faculty, through Dr. Lander, said to me, "We like your topic, but we have something else we'd like you to do. Perhaps you're the right man." And that was the topic of Bernard Revel. So here, Krauss tells the story, and don't forget the story, because we're going to come back to it. He's in the Chabad library, there's a Chabad librarian. Evidently, he's someone he knows, and he's friendly with him. And he says to him, "I'm thinking I'm doing a doctorate." What's the doctorate? He wants to do it on Chabad's relationship to religious Zionism. The topic we spoke about 15 minutes ago. So this librarian says to him, it's the Chabad library in Bnei Brak, and this librarian says to him, "Why limit yourself only to religious Zionism? Chabad is much bigger than just its relationship with religious Zionism." And that's where the idea began to do a major piece on the Rebbe, and he calls it Hashvi'i. Calling it Hashvi'i because the heart of the Rebbe's message is that opening talk he gave the day that he decided to take the mantle of leadership, to take over for the previous Rebbe, and he began with the previous Rebbe's, this is 1951, Yud Shvat, and he began with the previous Rebbe's last maimah, which was Dira B'Tachtonim, bringing God down, Bas Bati L'Gani, we spoke about it in length, and now he's taking over and he says, we have to bring God into his garden, we have to bring God back to the human being, we have to bring God to us, and we will have that ability because we are the seventh generation. Now, I want to thank Yomo. Once again, he sent me, it's unbelievable to me, I have to apologize, but I'm overwhelmed by the power, the influence, the greatness of the computer. To me, it's overwhelming. Someone who grew up, never heard of a computer, didn't know how to turn one on, until a few years ago, when a Talmud in the Kollel, David Katz, said to me, "Rebbe, it's a disgrace that you don't know how to turn a computer on." And I said, "You know what? My mother learned, she was over 70. I'm over 70. Teach me. And at least I know how to reach the Yankee website and a few other things on a computer. I don't say I'm a big genius, but I'm utilitarian. Google, I pass in Shilas. I save someone's life from the Kollel through the computer. Unbelievable. Okay. On the computer, you recall that story with the Rebbe telling the girl to clap, not to sing. So you see it with your own eyes, but that's not the only thing. The talk that I'm quoting from in 1951, there's a recording of it on the computer with pictures. It's not videoed, it's recorded, but they have pictures of who was there. You see Shlomo LeKalbach about the third person from the Rebbe. Unbelievable. You see Rabbi Hudkoff in it. And the Rebbe is giving this talk, and at that moment he's accepted Hasidus. It's a maimah, everything he spoke about. And the Rebbe is crying. And Hasidim told me this, LeKabatnikim, on the recording you can hear the Rebbe crying. He's in tears. Again, you can wonder, why was the Rebbe crying? I can only answer as a Litvak looking in, that he probably understood the great responsibility he was taking upon himself to become the seventh Rebbe and to take the ideas of the sixth Rebbe and bring it down to earth and take it forward and bring the Ribbono Shel Olam down to earth and to reach out to every Jew, and not only to every Jew, but to reach out to every Gentile, as we will get there. What a responsibility. And you can hear the Rebbe crying. It's very, very moving. Now, before we go further, I want to shift gears, and I want to take you into the world of Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. And I want to raise an issue. This caused a tremendous storm. And there's a difference between the first edition and the second edition. In the Sunday class a week ago, we referred to Rabbi David Holz's book, The Rav Thinking Aloud, I think it's called. And remember, I gave you my critique and all that went on. And in the first edition of the book, David sort of says that the Rav played down Rav Kook's great Lamdanut, but rather viewed him as a spiritual person. In the second edition, that entire paragraph is gone. It was a great outcry. Now, I heard the Rav speak about Rav Kook. It was a moment in time. It was, you see, students don't realize the Rebbe is only a mortal. You view your Rebbe, you view like a malach. I'm referring, of course, to the Gemara in Chagiga, Moed Katan, it's twice in Shas. Im harav domel malach, the pasuk, I believe it's in Hosea, im malachi, check me out. Ki malach Hashem tzvakot hu. If a Rebbe is like a malach, you can learn Torah from him. If not, you can't study Torah. So you view a Rebbe like a malach. You don't realize a Rebbe is only a human being. He has to eat three times a day. He has illness, his health, he grows older, he hears good news, he hears bad news, he has a family. So we press the Rebbe. I don't know if Yitz remembers this. Rebbe, you teach us good shayurim, but we never have a chance to absorb your hashkafa, to speak with you about hashkafa. You got to remember, when the Rebbe gave shir in class, he was kulo brisk. The hashkafa is once a year he gave a yotzai drasha for his father, so the second half was hashkafa, the agada. He gave a tshuva drasha once a year. Outside of that, in New York, you never heard hashkafa. In Boston, it was better because Saturday night he spoke hashkafa. So we bothered the Rav, we bothered him, it was after his cancer operation. And one, I believe it was a Wednesday night, I could check out the date for sure because I know exactly the date. One night in, I believe it was 1960, we got the Rav to meet with us in Klein Hall. There was a, I don't know what it is today, but there was like a rest area with a picture of Yitzchok Hanan on the wall, and there was a fireplace in back, and we met with the Rav informally, and we shot questions at the Rav. And once you shoot a question at the Rav, he started to give answers and go beyond. And the second time, Matty Weisenberg, Zeicher Zichrono Levracha, presented a paper, and the Rav commented. And then we wanted a third time, and the Rebbetzin told us off in no uncertain terms, "You have no pity on my husband. You don't understand how tired he is. You don't understand what a major operation he had." And this never took place again. The first night changed my entire life. The questions and answers, the hashkafa, but it's not for now. What is for now is we got involved in the question of outreach. And we got to remember, Chabad put outreach on the agenda. Before Chabad, no one used the word outreach in America. Halavai, Torah would survive. There were a handful of religious Jews, a handful of old-time religious Jews, going back to Rabbi Revel and Mr. Mendelevich and all that they built in America. And there were the DPs who came to America, the survivors who came to America, the Hasidim who came to America, and who would ever dream that we would survive, and not only survive, but survive in dignity. The Rebbe put outreach on the agenda. So we got involved, and YU already was doing some outreach. I don't know yet if the NCY was doing outreach. And we asked Rebbe, and Rebbe got involved with a whole discussion of Rav Kook. So Rebbe said about Rav Kook that he met him on his deathbed in 35. He really didn't know him. And he said he was a Baloshin, a Talmud Chacham, but Rebbe started praising his spiritual personality. If you were there that night and you listened to the recording, which later survives and one day will be made public, I hope within the next 100 years, and you'll see it's not that he says Rav Kook is not a Lamdin. He's saying that his spiritual personality was overwhelming. And Rav Kook told the story, Rav Mori Rebbe told the story about Rav Kook. I have to be very brief, how he came to the kibbutz. You know, it's more than 100 years now, or 100 years since the rabbis, remember, books have been written, the sojourn of the rabbis to the kibbutzim, Rav Kook and Rabbi Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, and they went to the kibbutzim, and Mori Rebbe tells the story. I don't know, again, it may be when the Rav told the story, he wasn't telling, he wasn't like his son, Reb Chaim, who every word has to be researched and documented. So the Rav told the story, he came to the kibbutz, and totally irreligious and whatnot, and he couldn't eat with them. He brought his food along, but he was with them all Shabbos. He davened, he made a minyan, he spoke Avat Yisrael and Binyan Haaretz, and finally he made Havdalah. And after the Havdalah, he said to these Jews, and Reb Chaim Sonnenfeld didn't go on the whole tiyul. At a certain point, he had it turned away. He couldn't take it anymore. You can't eat. There's no place to eat. These are Jews. Machalal Shabbos, machalal everything. No karet mishpacha, no mikvah. I don't have to tell you. The Ganya and the original Ki Ayelet HaShachar and the original building of Israel. We need not. You all know the story. So Rav Kook got up and said that I hope to be back next year, but when I come back, I want to be able to eat with you from your kitchen. And it made a big impact. Some people demanded, I think afterwards they made a part of the kitchen kosher, part not, whatever. But his spiritual personality was overwhelming. Now, did the Rav quote Rav Kook? An interesting question. I heard him with these ears quote twice a fabulous vort from Rav Kook. And this vort, halavai, the Lubavitcher Rebbe would have known this vort. He could have used it very aptly and successfully dealing with the question, who are we? Can we do it? Who are we? I look at pictures, I told you. I have pictures of my family. I don't even know who they are. We can only guess, because you don't write in back of pictures. And your pictures, no. Your father knew who they were. My mother knew who they were. We don't know today. We look at our forebears. It may be my brother and I look, my brother who lives here, so obviously I'm much closer with him on a physical level than my brother in Las Vegas. Even though my brother Las Vegas is married to the Rosh Yeshiva's daughter, Rav Dov Sherman from RJJ. So we look at the pictures and you see Jews with long beards, bekishes. These are our forebears. So right away you say, who are we? What are we? What can we accomplish? Well, I hate to tell you, I'll put it in parentheses, my brother and I accomplished unbelievably more than our forebears as far as Yiddishkeit goes. Anachnu modim l'Kadosh Baruch Hu. I don't want to go one word further. Kvod, the Ein HaBracha Metzuya Ela B'Davar HaSmuya Min HaAyin. And we'll leave it at that. So I want to quote the Rav now, quoting Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kot. This is part of davening on Yom Kippur, part of the Vidui. Everyone in the world knows this. What are we saying, Vidui? I'm quoting now from Magza. Elokai, Ad Shalom Notzati, Eini Kedai. What does that mean? Before I was born, I'm worthless? This is what we have to tell God? Yomo, before you were born, you were nobody. You were nothing. It's not even shaykh to say the word worthless. Worthless is on something tangible. The microphone is tangible. Is it worthy or worthless, period? I'm here. I'm doing something good. Or am I worthless? You know, a kid, you get mad at a kid. The worst thing in the world is a parent or a rebbe, you tell a kid, you're worthless, you're a noisvaf, you're a trumpenik, you're a pushtak. You understand? It's the worst thing in the world, because then the kid lives up. You got to tell a kid, listen, you're a little bit wild now, but you have the ability to be so good and so smart and so wonderful and so pious and so decent and so upright. Try to live up to it. Try. Make a start. You understand? He has to know. This is the way to be a Rebbe. My wife always got mad at me, Donnie, because you know, I didn't always teach like today. Everyone here is older than me in this classroom right now. I began teaching elementary school, Talmud Torah, 1959. High school, college kids. Afterwards, then postgraduate. So my wife would say, you never have a student you don't love. How can that be? But that's a good Rebbe. You have to see, not every kid can be a goal, not every kid can be a tzaddik, but every kid has a neshama. Rafi, you have to talk to that neshama. So what does this mean? Elokai ad shalom otzati eini kedai. And the Rav quoted Rav Kook, b'dechilu urechimu. He said shalom. Rav Kook said that if I was born at this time, in this place, I have the ability to succeed. Ad shalom notzati. If I would have been born, a guy like Rakefet, let me poke fun at myself. All right, I'm born at the time of the Chatam Sofer. Couldn't succeed. I'm born in Brisk. With all my love for Brisk, and all my understanding of Brisk, and all my being in Brisk vicariously, I wouldn't succeed. I was born in this place and this time in the Bronx. 20-minute walk from Yankee Stadium. Pardon me, Jay, for reminding you of the Bosuck and the Yankee rivalry. Whenever the Red Sox came to the Bronx to play the Yankees, there'd be less attendance in the yeshiva. That much I can tell you. I don't have to tell you where the tzaddikim were. Okay? So, I can succeed. God put me here at this moment. It's a meridik vart. Ach, you see, the Hasidim come late, and Alex.
You go late also.
No, I go late because Baruch Hashem, we love each other, but you miss so much already. That's what bothers me. I know. Okay, you catch up. I see you rushed, Ivey. Did you eat breakfast yet?
No.
Pull out a breakfast at least and relax. A fabrengen. Ah, good. Shalom, you got to be a good man in life. And you got to love all your students. And each one here is an ace, a gem, but each one has a long story. Even Professor Tarrigan heard from me this morning about a certain student. He now understands a little better the classroom on Sunday. Okay, Baruch Hashem. It's a meritic vote from the Rav. I tell you, I'm in Tukrei, I'm overwhelmed. I heard this in 1960. I heard it again via tape. And he probably said it many, many, many times. Then I'll just go one drop further. V'akshav kishenotzati ki'ilu lo notzati. So what does that mean? That now when you're created, it's like you're not created. So it's called Rav Kook. Person should always be humble. You shouldn't become a Baal Gaiva. I was created here now. I can change the world. Akshav, that Akshav Shanatsati, I'm the boss. I'm the big shot. I'm way beyond Eino Kedai. No, then you become a Baal Gaiva. And I heard someone in the classrooms, and I think it was Herbie Maltz was quoting the Gemara, I believe it's in Baba Batra, that a Talmud Chacham has to have a Shminit Shebishminit of Gaiva. Let me tell you, I had one Rebbe, what we spoke about yesterday, Akava Kineva Taib Motzin, so I had one Rebbe, and boy, he had Gaiva. And one time a student gave him a little bit of a dig, you know, Rebbe, it's a little, that Gaiva, that tells Gaiva. And I'll never forget, he said to the Father, certainly we have to have Gaiva. And he quotes the Gemara, Shminit Shebishminit. I mumbled under my breath. 1/64th, if I'm correct, or even less, an eighth of an eighth of an eighth divided up, but not that it dominates your personality. That's what it means. Achshev Shenotzati. And by the way, this was the Rav and this was the Rebbe. If you knew them intimately, there was no Gaiva about them. In other words, Baruch Hashem, I have this ability, I'm born at this time, I have these achievements, but there's no Gaiva. It's not that I'm a Baal Gaiva. Someone else doesn't have the ability, he's not going to learn the way I learn, he's not going to have the ability to teach, not going to have the ability to explain, not going to have the ability to become a professor of mathematics, of biology, of chemistry, etc., etc., etc. But when you use your ability, God-given, it's nothing to be proud about. Meiridik, fabulous explanation of the Vidui. And that's Rav Kook. Now, we can... Yes, Yitzchak.
I think there's a difference between two words in English. One is pride and one is arrogance.
Right, okay.
A person should have sense, pride, achievements, but not enough to be arrogant. Because arrogant means I did it on my own.
Right.
Not my parents, and not my Rebbe, and not my parents.
Right. A person should know, all right, I've accomplished something with life, but it has to be with humility. Thank the Eibishter that I was able to transmit, to give, to influence, to accomplish. It's a lot to talk on this topic. Leave it at that. Let's come back now. But you see, Yoma, what's on your mind? I see your face is alight with smile.
I just heard a different interpretation of Shemini Shibashmini.
Yeah.
That the eighth pasuk in the eighth parsha, which is parsha Vayishla,
right.
Katonti Mikol Chasadim.
Oh, very good. But that's a Hasidic interpretation. That's not Pshuto Shem. The gross of that. So now you see why the Grug is called Agon HaChasid. But okay, eighth, very nice, very nice. But I stick to the pshat I heard from Rebbe and Rav Kook, and I saw it in the classroom, and I'll never forget the look and shine, you know, like this, like shaking himself. Shmini Shebi Shmini is Yomuto, das Lav Bin Haben, that you have to have, and oh boy. Oh boy, humility. All right, let it stand, let it be. If you knew the Rav, if you knew the Rebbe, remember when the Rebbe said, "What? I don't like when people look at me when I'm davening. Was kook menon? I'm an elderly Jew. But what can you do? You're a Rebbe. Chassidim are looking to you." Later in life, he made his peace with it. I understand they put in a little stool. What would you call it? A shraf Rav. How would you say that in English, which the Rebbe stood on? Am I correct that people could see him all over the Beis Medrash? He was higher than he really was in life, standing on a, what would you call that, a stool, a podium, perhaps. Nechama Leiber, which used to teach, she would sit, she would always sit when she was teaching, and they put her chair on a little podium so that the students, everyone could see her, no matter how crowded the room was. Now, this is exactly the point. I'm now quoting from the volume of Deutsch, beginning on page 25. The chapter is entirely devoted to this question of Shvi'i, and he's asking, and he quotes the Midrashim, everything we quoted last week, everything we referred to earlier, and he quotes the Midrash we spoke to, that the Midrash says, Kol HaShvi'in Chabibin, not Kol HaChabibin Shvi'in. In other words, anyone in the seventh, it has nothing to do with who you are, what abilities you have, how inferior you feel. The very fact that you're in the seventh generation makes you special. God put you here with a mission, and you'll be able to discharge it. Put it together with the Rav Zvart, quoting Rav Kook, and you have a fabulous, fabulous concept. And the Rebbe is medayek, not kol chavivin shvi'in. In other words, if it meant your achievements, nasin kol, wow, Natan, just got a smicha from YU, from five other rebbeim, he's working for a PhD in Jewish philosophy. All right, he's chabiv. He's like a shvi. No, kol hashviin chabibim. And you see, this means you should not raise the question, can I? How can I? Who am I? What am I? Look at my forebears. I'm a nobody compared to them. No. The fact that you're in the seventh generation and that God put you here, you're going to have that ability. Now, the Rebbe also spoke, and he coined the phrase, and this already comes based upon the sixth Rebbe, Hadar Haron LeGalut VaHadar HaRishon LeGu'ula. Where the transition? It flows the seventh generation, the worst is over. From here, we go to Ge'ula. And everyone in this generation, you have to help bring it about. You have to create a synthesis between the creation and the Creator. He has to be back in earth. These are very powerful words. And you see, when you speak in these terms, you inspire. People have a mission. People have a commitment. People have a viewpoint. It goes beyond ordinary daily life. Now, take the average person. How does he live? We'll talk about Israel. Look at the politicians. Look at the news. Look at the police department again. How does the average person live? Wants to make a living, have money, achieve a career. A little bit of wine, women, and song. Some a little, some more. Evidently, the police department, they wanted more than a little. It's unbelievable what's going on if you're listening to the news. I hope that Harav Alshech, the new head of the police, Tzaddik, I'm told, everyone who knows him with such praise, I hope we're in for a new dawn, a new tomorrow, and halavai, within the next decade, we should see like what happened to the army, that high-ranking officer after officers with a kippah, with tzitzit, and the entire lifestyle is different. But that's the average person. He's bothered by the tangibles, by here, the now. And even if he's a fine person, he wants to teach educational psychology. He wants to deal with children. He wants to deal with social work, social outreach. Fine, psychology, psychiatry, what, how much you can help people. I'm not trying to denigrate anyone. But you see, when you have a vision that we're the last generation of Golas and the first generation of Geula, you're an entirely different person. The early Zionists had that vision, right or wrong. Of course, they threw away religion. Their concept of Geula was a great tomorrow, socialism, democracy, liberalism. But we're no longer the Jew in the ghetto. But Chabad's view, the Torah view, the religious Zionist view? Yes, the last generation of Golas, the first generation of Geula, but it's a spiritual viewpoint. And if you're caught up in it, and you understand Shvi, and you understand why you're here, and you understand why you survived the Holocaust, and why you survived the spiritual Holocaust of the Western world. What a vision. The Rebbe created it. This vision has affected every Jew, Bahashechu Shem. If you would have told me when I learned in Lakewood that the day would come that Lakewood would engage in outreach, they have outreach calling them all over the United States. They learn to stir them, and a third say that they're busy with outreach. It's different than Chabad's outreach. I said that already. It's a Litvish outreach. Learning. They're not going
to
stand.
For people who are, tends to be oriented, there's people who are already observant.
Well, no, I wouldn't say they outreach.
Not exclusively.
Yeah, not exclusively. No, they really, I've seen it. Depends where they're located. But the Rebbe introduced a vision that went way beyond. And NCSY, do I have to go further? Wow. Why you? Jewish studies program. Think for a minute. It's unbelievable. Now, once again, I want to call your attention. I think this is very important. You know, and we'll come to it in great detail, but not yet. Down the line, you see, with this message, you always run the risk of the messianic fervor overtaking reality. And as Yomo, I don't know what you wrote that up, I don't know, but we Yomo showed me something. You wrote it up, right? You showed me in writing. He wrote a description of last week's shiur. So he wrote, the Rebbe may have unintentionally, perhaps started this messianic fervor, and I corrected it to read, the Rebbe may have perhaps, right? That's what I put in, may have perhaps, unintentionally. But see, this is very dangerous. You have to keep the sense of balance. Now, the critics of Lubavitch, and all of you have heard this, I just want to put it in context, it's not that I don't know the criticism, but the Rebbe would always end off, he would always say, like, I end off every shiur since 1981, January 1981, Das Vedanya. You have to understand what I went through, what it was like. And someone just put down my wife, a Russian woman, said, you visited Russia, you worked for the Mossad in Russia in the 1980s. The 1970s were terrible. So I want to tell you, 1981 and 1985 was particularly terrible. We weren't allowed to use telephones. It was the storm before the lull. You have no idea how bad. They were picking up Jews and sending them to prisoners of Zion wholesale. So I told my wife, you don't argue, but she's wrong. 1970s were bad. The 1950s were a lot worse. There were no shlichim from the Mossad in Russia. There were Chabad and the executions of the 30s. I mean, it's beyond words. How the Russian Jews survived and how they've come back to their people and how Putin is a bit of a Chabadnik. It's unbelievable. I mean, you got to know what's going on in Russia today. But there is, so like I say, das vidanya, and there were reasons why I wanted to encourage the youngsters to get involved, to demonstrate, to do, to know. Some of them I had to attract victims to send to Russia with double passports, particularly for the holidays, as I've explained to you. We used to send young people not to teach, but just to come to shul and daven, and Jews should see that old Am Yisrael Chai, that there's still Jewish kids in the world who know how to daven, who know how to lay in. You have no idea what this meant in Russia. I mean, I got to give credit to the Mossad, to Nativ, to Aryeh Kroll, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. They let the Russian Jews know that we're still alive and kicking and practicing and learning. I mean, it's beyond comprehension. And what we achieved and what we have today, the return of millions of Jews to a Jewish consciousness. So the Rebbe used to end off every talk, mamish, that it's kanviyazos, yes, mamish, kanviyachshav, it should be immediate. We should achieve the geula shleima, and Zalman does the degree, mamish. So cynics used to say, mamish, Rashi Teva, Menachem Mendel Schneerson. You follow? So you see, this is the double-edged sword which later gives birth to the Messianic movement and becomes, I need not tell you, a major, major problem in Lubavitch. Now, with that being said, on page 30, he goes into a very interesting discourse that Yitzchak, you're in Jewish philosophy, you can take this further, ad infinitum. And I have to give him credit here. I have to give, you know, he did a doctorate. Maybe one of his professors told him to go into this, Krauss. And he...
But you mentioned before Deutsch.
If I said Deutsch, it's a slip of the tongue. Deutsch is what I quoted months ago. You should have corrected me. Krauss, Yitzchak Kreuz. Kreuz, it's pronounced in Hebrew. And... So Yitzchak Kreuz, Krauss, let me say it in English, my native language, Yitzchak Krauss now raises a different issue. The Rav, you go into the Rav's writings, Ish Emunah, the lonely man of faith. Right or wrong? You go into the documentary that a dummy named Rakefet brought into the world. You have no idea how much heartache was involved in that. How many people laughed at me. And when it finally came out, how many people wanted to kill me. You have no idea. But that's fine. Why? Because each one had their own take on the Rav. And this take was the take of the producer. Once I found that producer did some job. The New York Times cited him, unbelievable. Now, he never did anything subsequently that comes near that level, but that level was Menashe Mayim Zikuni. It was my third try, and involved someone who's not alive, who became my Talmud, and Siyata Deshmaya, and a Jew who yet knew my wife's grandparents to give $1 million. I mean, see, we didn't have to do any schnurring. You have no idea, no disgrace to the Rav's memory, no schnurring. Baruch Hashem. So everyone had their own take. It portrays them. So I told them, I agree with 95%, but the producer reached different conclusions on two issues. So I spoke with Abe Lvovitz, sacred father, who gave $1 million and knew the Rav intimately. He said, this is my take. I said, Abe, if that's your take, I keep my big mouth shut, period. So, you know, the lonely man of faith. And the Rav always spoke about how lonely he is, how lonely, and Krauss contrasts it with life. Watch, it is such an important point. Yes, of course we're lonely. Our whole life is different. Our whole being is different. Our whole thought system is different. How many hours a day, Rakefet? Are you crazy? You wake up at 4:15, you start learning. You're going through Shas again and again and again. You worry about what will be 100 years from now. You worry about your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren, etc. You worry about your Talmidim. normal human being lives that way. He wakes up in the morning, breakfast, lunch, supper, work, salary, vacation, right or wrong, a little rejuvenation. You look at the computer, what do you look at? Other people look at the computer, well, a world, forget about pornography, we're not talking, we have a world of movies, songs, wine, women, song, beautiful, recreation. We live differently, we act differently, we think differently. The Rebbe is right, the lonely man of faith. And here's where the Rebbe comes along and he explains, by unity, you overcome loneliness. The fact that you're in the seventh generation and that you have this tremendous goal and so many others have this goal, you're no longer lonely. You are encouraged. You have a mission. You have people who think like you. We're the Dar HaShvi'i. And now you can understand the power of Enash Ansei Shlomeinu, the power of a Fabrengen, the power of a Kinis Shluchim, Kinis Shluchat, even to bring children to 770. Imagine kids from Thailand, from India, from South Korea today. Remember, South Korea, Saigon, Chabad. Bring them together. You see, you're not alone. In unity, there is strength. And the Rebbe constantly hit upon this theme. We are the generation, and the Rebbe would say, even though the generation, he quotes the Rebbe here from a Fabrengen, even though the generation feels so inadequate, even though the generation feels the darkness that envelops us is so overwhelming, but the Rebbe constantly encouraged them. No, you are the generation Achron Lagalut, Rishon Lagaula, Doshvi'i. You have this power. And if that is the case, you're going to be able to overcome all the difficulty. We are all working together and we are going to accomplish. And this concept signifies the most unique difference between Chabad and all the other Hasidic movements in the world. No, anyone here a Belz the Hasid? All right, I'll play the role. My wife, as you know, stamps, descends from Belz Chassidim, big Belz Chassidim. Her great-great-grandfather was the Shliach Tzibur for the Sar Shalom, for the first Belz Rebbe, Reb Sholem Rokach. When I told that to the present Rebbe's Gabbai, wow, I was a hero. It was right here, not in the Kola. We were on a tour every year. We used to go on tours sponsored by the Jewish Agency. The Kollel used to close down. We had to do it because we get money from the... I don't know why today they either we don't get money or the tours were abolished. And part of the tour for Orthodox rabbinical students was Belz. And, wow, you come from Belz. No, let's see. What does it mean to be a Belz Chassid? What does Belz require of you? A Vishnitzer Chassid, a Gera Chassid, a Colin Staliner, you name it, a Ruzhina, a Sadi Gera, whatever branch of Ruzhin you want. A Chassid, you look at the Rebbe, you admire the Rebbe, you bring a pigeon to the Rebbe, occasionally you daven with the Rebbe, you go to the shtibl, you go to the Rebbe, they have affairs, encourage the children. What you do is, all you have to do is live a good religious Torah lifestyle centered around the Rebbe. Right or wrong? Right or wrong?
The Kehillah.
Centered around the Rebbe, the Kehillah, call it what you wish. I'll come to that in a second, Kehillah. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, his demands from his Hasidim were as great as demands from himself. See the difference? You're part of that generation. You're with me. You're the Dor HaShvi. You have to help me. You can't just sit back and look at me. You have to work as hard as I work. All right, I'm leading, I'm setting the example, I'm setting the goals. And by the way, his goals got higher and higher as he had more and more success. We'll see that. He began with a handful of shluchim, but by the 70s already, it was an institution. Very different. The message, the outreach, even to Goyim, even to Gentiles, as we will see. But you have to understand what a difference. And here, putting it all together, you can see what it means. Until I was created, Eini Kedai. And I'll take two examples. The Rebbe and the present Bava Rebbe. Not Bava, Bell's the Rebbe. Take the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Just imagine in previous generations, where would he be? What would he accomplished? What would he have done if he were alive 200 years ago, 150 years ago? With his mind, he would have sat and learned, perhaps given Sheyurim in a yeshiva. It could have been, there were no Hasidic yeshivas yet. First Hasidic yeshiva is the Maram Shapiro, the concept of a Hasidic yeshiva for all Hasidim. Or I shouldn't say the first, because Tomchei Tamimim was before, but the Rebbe would have given Shem Tomchei Tamimim. There would have been nothing beyond his learning, his great mind. Because he was in this generation, here he came and he had to give up sitting, learning, writing, speaking, and learning, giving his daily shiur. Everything became centered about inspiring the Hasidim to change the world, to bring God down to this world. Of course, he spoke, he taught, he was blessed, he had a cadre of people who assisted him, wrote down every word he said, but the whole thrust of his personality became different. Could he have accomplished this in a previous generation? Absolutely not. The generation wasn't ready, it wasn't the seventh. The ground wasn't ready. The last generation of Gullus was not there, the first generation of Geula. You see, he rose to the challenge. He accepted the leadership. He cried. And it was a very hard decision because it involved terrible family problems, as we will see. Now, you take the Belzer Rebbe, it's an excellent example. The present Belzer Rebbe, you know the story, we've told the story many times. I lectured about it years ago when I did the history of Torah in modern times. The Reb Arla Bel survived the Holocaust. Reb Arla was a tzaddik yisod olam, is the son of Rabbi Yisachar Dov. We're talking, he, Rabbi Yisachar Dov, was the son of Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yoshua was the son of Reb Shalom, the first Belzer Rebbe. Your name. Survived the Holocaust, his entire family wiped out. I think there were 11 children wiped out. No one survived. The Gera Rebbe survived, and some of his children survived. The Briska Rav survived, some of his children survived. The Bells, I don't think there was anyone else, all his children were wiped out. All right, he reached Israel, went to Tel Aviv, Rehov HaCharaam. The stories are legendary about him. A three-volume set just came out about Rabbi Aril of Belz, written by Belz of Chassidim. Very, they tell me, Mamish, it's Tzadik Yisod Olam. No one knew when he ate. He fasted all day. He davened all day. He ate at night a drop of food. He was very skinny. Tzadik, Tzadik Yisod Olam. All right. Dynasty could have ended there. But his younger brother got out with him, Reb Mordechai, who was the Begula Rav. His family was wiped out. He remarried in Israel in 47, I believe he remarried. And he had a boy and a girl. A boy that was born in 48, a girl that was born in 49. I believe I'm correct in the years. And he died very shortly thereafter. You can't ask questions. Anyone who went through Hitler, either they live a very long life or live a very short life. It depends on your personality. Some people can survive stress, some people can't. There's no way to explain it. With the Altamira, it's the same story. Many of the Altamira died very young, and many went on to live a very full life. And people said to me, I remember when my Rebbe I had for a few weeks died, not even married yet, dancing with a Sefer Torah and Simchas Torah in Mir in Brooklyn. It was the early 50s, 52, I believe. So people told me he couldn't take the stress. Rav Henoch Fishman, people said, how did he die so young? The everyone loved him in Mir. He was the Liebling. He was the favorite. And people said he went through Shanghai, that whole decision, that whole episode. How do you know how much tension he was under? So this boy was raised by the Elder Chassidim, and in 1966, as we've said so many times, at the age of 18, he married the Vishnitzer Rebbe's daughter. Now you look at the present Belzer Rebbe. All right, it's not a great Lamdan, not a Gadol Hadar in learning. There have been Rebbeim who everyone acknowledged, the Lubavitcher Rebbe. You can be pro-Lubavitcher, anti-Lubavitcher, but everyone knows that Rebbe was a Gaon Adir, period. There were Gerer Rebbeim, you take the Sfat Emet, the Chiddush Rim. These were Goinei Goinim. They say about the Reim, Rav Avraham Mordechai, the third Gerer, who called the Kol HaShas Kula on his fingertips. So, but look what this Belzer Rebbe did. He took a Chassidus which was practically nothing. And look what it is today. Totally revitalized it. You talk about the Kehillah. Wow, Machzikei Hadat, that's what it's called. What he did, what he built, go to Antwerp, go to London, go to Stamford Hill. Wherever you go, Belzer Chassidim, I saw it with my own eyes in Hendon. I can't forget it. Wealthy Jews who could buy and sell, I don't want to talk about you, but Yomo and myself, buy and sell us, Yomo. Wealthy Jews in their living room. B'makam einan yut b'makam ashirut. All right, quoting the Gemara and reading the Beis HaMikdash. The focal piece on the wall is a picture of the Belz synagogue with his seat and his name plaque on it. And Belz was so clever that they sold who knows for how many tens of thousands of dollars. But this guy never shows Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So there's a second name, a secondary person buys it for a little less money, and you get the seat. And if both don't show, so I saw with my own eyes, there's a printout of all the Belzer Talmidim in the yeshiva, in the advanced yeshiva. Each one is given a seat number and a time when you are allowed to sit in that seat in Davin, like 15 minutes. What's the gauntlet of that seat? The Rebbe is davening up front. So you see, chance to daven with the Rebbe. You got to be a chassid to appreciate this. I mean, I'd look at them. What are you, out of your mind? I want to daven. I don't want to be disturbed. I don't want to interrupt. No, a chassid, there are 50 different fikvahs. 15 different minyanim going on every floor. And the, you know how big the place is, and floors are divided. And he sees, he runs up in the middle of where he is to be 15 minutes to be davening with the Rebbe. So you see, it's an amazing achievement. And here's a man, you cannot say he's the Tzaddik Rebbe Arilu. Rebbe Arilu was skinny like this microphone. I saw pictures of him. Of course, when I came in Aliyah, I was no longer alive. But I visited, I remember in the early, in the 68 or 69, I visited it became a Talmud Torah. I think it was a Gerit Talmud Torah that after the Belzer Rebbe died, and you could feel his presence. People who spoke with him two words were still shaking 10, 20, 30 years later. He's not the Lamdan that other Rebbe Yamar, but the ability this man had, the fact that he was created, Kedai. And I have to say, here too you see the influence of Chabad. True, what is Belz? The Rebbe, the Shul, the Belz Rebbeim had this vision. They have to build shuls. That is their goal in life. That's what they have to accomplish. Yes, Rebbe sent it. You be a good chassid. Nothing beyond. Today, even Belz is involved in outreach. And by the way, not outreach to their own. We're talking about outreach to people who suddenly discover in their 20s who they are, seeking their roots. I've seen kids there. They tell me they knew nothing about Yiddishkeit, and they found out their roots, Belz. They outreach to them. And they have outreach in English, not just in Hebrew, not just in Yiddish. It's amazing. So you see Rav Kook's vort and put it together with the Rebbe's vort, that this generation, you can accomplish. It is something. It is something. And let me go another step. It's a meritic vort. It encourages, it inspires. I mean, this is something you have to... If you're outreaching, Rafi, and this kid, you have to say to the kid, look where you are, look where you've come, look at the questions you're asking. God put you here, because at this moment in time, you're going to have the ability to find yourself. Okay? And Chabad, the whole world, you have an obligation. Not just enough to daven three times a day. Not just enough to go to the Rebbe. Not just enough to drink vodka and wait for the Rebbe to tell you l'chaim. Not just enough to go Erev Yom Kippur to get lekach from the Rebbe. It's amazing how they use it. Not just enough to get a dollar bill for tzedakah. I mean, this is genius how they came up with it. And exchange a few words with the Rebbe. You got to bring God back to this world. You have to talk about it, create. You have to do. What a story. What an achievement, this generation. Now, on page 33, Yitzchak Krauss tells a very, very fascinating insight. He says, you want to know... what Chabad is all about, how this message of the Rebbe took hold. And I did a lot of research in the Chabad library in Bnei Brak. I became very friendly with this librarian. And, you know, when you are coming in and doing, and it's like I told Sherry this morning, I'm not going to be around Wednesday midday until Monday morning. I'm going to be in Tel Aviv, so she should know. If the emails come in, please tell them I'm not here, I can't do anything until I get back. Fine. So the librarian tells him, Yitzchak, Tedalacha, you should know that Friday I'm not here, I go out Miftza Tfilin to put Tfilin on, you know, go to the shopping malls and put tefillin on Jews. So Krauss looks at him. Krauss Krauss looks at him and he says, "You don't look like a person who's capable of standing on street corners and putting on tefillin. You're bashful. You're shy." Now, mind you, how many librarians do you know? What characterizes a librarian? Compare him to a Rebbe, to a teacher, to a Malamed. To be a good Malamed, you have to be outgoing. Personality plus. Vibrant. Exuberant. Vivacious. Right or wrong? To be a good teacher. Donnie, are you listening? To be a librarian, I've had many students became librarians. Nechbala Kalim. These are guys who would rather sit with a book and not be bothered. All right, they master Sfarim, but they're not people persons. They're book persons. Morty, are you reading me? Absolutely correct. It has to do. Maybe a Charlie would, in any library you go into. What a difference. A teacher versus a librarian. Why, you, we had, in my time, Rabbi Mandelkorn in the library was a gong, what he knew, but he wasn't a teacher. There was Dean Stock. What Dean, remember Dean Stock? What he knew, wow. But they were different personalities. So Krauss is right. He's looking at this poor librarian, shy and bashful, and he's saying to him, "How do you go and stand on street corners, stand in a shopping center, approaching strangers? Did you put on tefillin today?" And he says, "You're right." The librarian answers him, "You're absolutely right. I'm shy. Ani baishan hadavar lo kal li. It's not easy for me." But he says, "The Rebbe taught me a message." And he quotes the Rambam, he quotes Maimonides, the Mishneh Torah, to Krauss. Gentlemen, Hilchat Tshuva, Perek Gimel, Halacha Dalet. And the Rambam paskins, this is a psak. Lefikach tzarech kol adam shireh atzmo kol ashtana kula, ki ilu Chetzyav zakai, v'chetzyav chayav. Person has to view himself. I have good deeds, I have bad deeds. I'm half and half. V'kein kol olam, chetzyav zakai, v'chetzyav chayav. The whole world, half and half. Chatach chet echad. If he does one sin, he weighs the balance negative, and it can harm the world. Asa mitzvah chat, harei hichriach atzmo vichriach kol halom kulo lekaf schot vigaram lahem tshua vahatzlacha. But if he does one mitzvah, he weighs the world, he weighs himself kaf schot. They're going to be blessed. They're going to have salvation, hatzalah. Teshua, that's more than salvation. That's spiritual greatness, meaningful purpose, goal, role in life, the joy of existence, bringing the Creator to the creation. And he says, with that message from Chabad, from the Rebbe, with the Rebbe time and time stressing that Rambam, when I go out, I look at the world half and half. If I can get X, Y, and Z to put on tefillin, I've weighed the scale, letzad haschut, letzad tshuah v'hatzalah. And that is a beautiful story, a beautiful insight, a beautiful understanding of the message of the Rebbe. And here you have a person who by nature, to use the classic Hebrew, nechba el hakelim, his natural disposition, let me hide, let me keep away, let me keep quiet, don't get me involved in major activities. And nevertheless, because of the Rebbe, he can go out. And he says, ends off this chapter on Shvi, if we can understand the story I just told you, it's not just Jew, not just this one. It's many Jews. It's the Jew in Morocco, the Jew in India, the Jew in Thailand, or in any place upon the globe. There they are, doing unbelievable shlichut because of the Rebbe. And then he says, after this little chat with this librarian, I started to understand not just the theory that the Rebbe engendered in what it means to be in the seventh generation, but I understand on a practical level how the theory of the Rebbe created an entire new world. Very, very insightful. So let me reiterate, I want to discuss something else in a second, but what did we do today? Today was the addendum to last week's class. What's most important, just because it's Dar HaShvi'i, so what? How does that make me extra special? How does that give me more ability? And the Rebbe stressed, it's not kol chavivim. It's not only the good ones are in the seventh generation, but kol hashvi, everyone in the seventh generation is good and beloved. It's a fabulous thought. I complimented it, and I never yet heard the Rebbe, maybe some person who's totally bucky in the Rebbe's talks and writings, or it's been written up, did he ever quote Rav Kook's part? But that's a meritic thought that the Rev quoted a number of times, and Amy Kadai. The fact that I'm in this generation is because I have the ability to function. And that has such implication, such ramifications. And you see, you look at the Rev, how he and the Rebbe, I mean, it's the same story, how they grew up in such a secluded environment, and they wind up worldly people. The Rebbe, Berlin, Paris, the Rav, Berlin, Boston, both of them ultimately wind up in New York, and each one, with their ability at this moment in time, changing the world of Jewish outlook, understanding, learning, in the Rebbe's case, outreach, a world process of bringing the Creator back to the creation. Okay. V'ezrat Hashem, when we pick up next week, I'll pick up just where we left, go further with Yitzhak Krauss, and then I have to introduce Chaim Miller before we come back to Yitzhak Krauss again and dealing with the concept of shlichot. I just want to pause for a moment. I referred to it yesterday, I referred to it again. The issue of feminism and Torah is a burning issue. It's not just the RCA and all that happened at the vote that just was taken in open orthodoxy and what they call centrist orthodoxy. I illustrated it yesterday. I told the story about Rabbi Ramon, who's the Rabbi Yosef Ramon, the great Gaon, wonderful individual. He's now the head, the Rosh Yeshiva of Machon Lev, and he just visited America and Canada, and my student, the vice president of Machon Lev, accompanied him, and he told me in Canada he met with all the rabbis, and they threw question after question at him, and Rabbi Ramon was flabbergasted. Every last question was aspects of feminism, what women can do, what women can't do, etc., etc. Now, I have to say I've done a lot of reading because I got caught up. My press conference evidently played some role in people's vote, and some websites have quoted me, and whatever. But the problem is real, and the heart of the problem, in other words, if you take the position of the RCA as they voted, which is essentially the way I understand it, we're not going to turn back the clock. Actually, I'll be talking in the next class, in the Sunday class, I'm going to show you an unbelievable paragraph from Rabbi Menashe Klein and compare it to Rabbi Mordechai Willick. And you can't turn back the clock. This is part of life. We just said it in this year. If I'm alive at this time, there's a reason why I can't go back 100, 200 years. Maybe I want to visit my forebears and show them what became of their family and show them proudly what became of their family. But the reality is we're here now. You can't change the clock. Women have left the ghetto, have left the kitchen, have left the house. And today, every woman has an occupation, and yeah, we don't have to elaborate. So now the women say, and rightfully so, if every male can be a rabbi, and we can be surgeons, and world-class lawyers, and accountants, and what have
here's
you,
the beginning of the mistake,
professors.
Comparison of the secular.
But
I just have to make one comment. Right? Yeah. The issue isn't really feminism, it's secularism. Yeah. That's just its,
say
that's,
that.
That's manifestation.
It's the issue is Gerber Toshav. I want to put it that way.
Okay. Well, listen to my lectures and
okay. We'll speak. Okay, Gerber Toshav. So the women, and this is the whole question, they're learning, they can paskin shilas, and women always get paskin shilas, and women with shaykhtat, we know that, and butkat, and they didn't do gassat, because physically they couldn't. Today they'll claim with the holding pen they can do gassat. It's a problem. I heard the Rebbe speak about it. Yomo gave me a link, with very powerful, very powerful. So how do we establish what the roles are? So here I want to say, from what I gather, what bothers the women is more than anything. Yes, we've achieved this, we've achieved that. But we want a title. We don't want to. These are good women who say we don't want to be like men. We understand there's a difference. Good women. I mean, women who understand Torah. Let me use a proper adjective. So I tell you, I'm jealous of Chabad. Chabad has shaluach and shlucha. And nothing equals that. It's fabulous. There's no problem there whatsoever. As a matter of fact, in some instances, the shluchar is more of a personality than the shaluach, as we all know. And when the shluchim were all in New York for the conference a few weeks ago, who was running the shuls if not the shluchat? So it keeps on haunting me, and you all know I've came out with a statement that no one has reacted to. People are laughing at me, but all right, I'm a big boy. You can laugh all you want. We should absolutely say that rabbis should not meet with women on a one-to-one basis, and Shonen Friedman, there is no reason in the world you shouldn't embrace what I'm saying with 10 fingers, considering where you come from. Okay? 10 fingers, not 9. So, right, people said to me, they're small, sure, all right, but I'm talking in principle. If there's gayrut, if there's problems of a marriage, if they have to consult, if they're delicate questions, you have to have, Baruch Hashem, we have women today. So what title do you use? So I came up, and I throw it out. You can laugh, discuss it, think about it, come up with something better. I challenge you. R.A. versus S.A. R.A., rabbinic advisor, essay, spiritual advisor. And now we'll take a congregation like Kehilat Jeshurun, which is a well-to-do, massive congregation, And they want a woman on the staff to deal with the women when they have problems? So fine. You write the rabbi's name. At the end, you write comma, rabbinic advisor. You write the woman's name, and you write spiritual advisor. If the rabbi's a rabbi, the woman has a PhD, you give them their titles, R.A.S.A. All right? If anyone can do better, you're welcome to it. But I see the challenge. If we could come up, they could feel, wow, we're equal, except I have my role, the rabbi has his role, there's certain things he can do that I can't do, he's a male, I'm a female. This is emulating the Rebbe with his talk on clothes. Lotubash, you know, if you heard the talk, fabulous. And the woman has to say, this is my role, this is what I can do, there's certain things only I can do that the rabbi, the RA, cannot do, but we each have to have our self-expression on this level. All right, maybe it's an idea, maybe not, maybe everyone will, you're all invited to laugh at me. Baruch Hashem, I live in this generation, and I hope we should be able to solve the problem and not lose Jews to the secularism, as Alex calls it, or the Toshavim, as my Rebbe called it. We're all aware of this deep problem. Okay, now let's just see. These were being given out. If anyone wants, it's a new edition of the Tanya. It's a selection from it, and it's unbelievable what they're doing today. And Tanya Mevueret, if you just know modern Hebrew, you can understand the Tanya 100%. This is a sicha from the Rebbe, and it's they picked the sicha on purpose. Likutei Sichot Vayishlach, showing how the Gid Hanasha, that Issa, represents, it's an expression of the uniqueness of the Jew, Chabivut Yisrael, the love and uniqueness of the Jew. Here is something very dear to my heart. Tzipora Rothkopf, she is from South Korea. And she now she opened up a restaurant in the old city, Seoul House, with Seoul. Oh, it's Seoul, Seoul. Seoul. How do you pronounce it? Seoul. And Saigon. Where is that in South Korea? What am I mixing up?
Saigon, Vietnam.
There's a Chabad in Seoul. Whatever. How do you pronounce it, Charlie? Seoul? That's easy. Okay. In soul food in the Holy Land, here she is. Her story is unbelievable. My brother is an ophthalmologist. My brother's at a convention of ophthalmologists in Las Vegas, I believe it was. And everyone comes over to him and tells him, there's another ophthalmologist here wearing a kippah with your name, Rothkopf. So the two got together. It turns out we're not related. He has practice in Lakewood, and he lives part of the year in Yerushalayim. I gather they're Balei Tshuva. She is South Korean, had a terrible marriage, ran away, and later met Dr. Rothkopf, not my brother, and they have a very happy marriage. It's many years later. What she has achieved, my brother sent me this, very fascinating, what she has achieved. She visits her aged mother in South Korea once a year. She has to spend all her time with certain peppers that you need for their food, grinding them by hand, but with her machine there, bringing back to Israel enough to last her for the year in her store, because these certain peppers that you have to grind and add spice to were not manufactured under rabbinic supervision. She now arranged, I believe it's the okay, absolutely, who else but Chabad, now all these products will be available with rabbinic supervision. For those of you that are baseball fans, here is a eulogy from the New York Times for Ken Johnson, died at 82, the only person to pitch a 9-inning no-hitter and lose the game. For those of you who know about Jewish history in America and remember Ramaz. Here is, Chaim Snitzer sent me this, I have two copies, it was printed out twice here, biography of Ramaz. And finally, most important, I made a number of copies. It's the tragedy of Ezra Schwartz, and someone named Brandon Wolf, I have no idea who it is, wrote an article that was widely read by many people, very inspirational, why the murder of Ezra Schwartz needs to be the wake-up call to the Jewish people. Very important if you're dealing with youth, teenagers, wake-up call it is. God should give us strength. I want to thank you very, very much for your participation. I apologize to Alex that we're actually 5 minutes over time, but Baruch Hashem, it is acceptable. I want to thank Shalom Friedman for attending our class. Are you, you have original blood in you, the name Friedman?
Goodman.
Why am I saying Friedman? I know why. No, I always have the problem. Names. Shalom Friedman interviewed me and published the book where I'm one of the people. So, excuse me. A good man is always welcome. Okay? Any relation to Rabbi Goodman, who was rabbi in Young Israel of Far Rockaway? No, just the Goodman who's a Goodman. Okay, we have it. I want to wish everyone a Freilich and Chanukah, Hatlakot Neirot, and we meet again.
Yantiv also.
Tonight's
Yantiv.
Tonight is Yotet Kislev, absolutely. Yantiv for Chabad, Yantiv for Chassidus, Yantiv for the world today. It's Yantiv for the world today, absolutely. Let me tell you one vat. Do you know the vat with the Chaim Isa? That in 1940 they put up signs about Yutet Kislev, and they called it Rosh Hashanah LeChassidut. And some cynical Litvak, etc., Chaim Isa, Nemakuk, they invented in our Mishnah it says four Rosh Hashanah, and here they invented a fifth Rosh Hashanah. And you know, a cynical Litvak and Reb Chaim Isa looked him in the eye and said, "You're right, correct." But it's interesting. Bazei alamol kumtzich mer, and ba'un says alamol veinik. By the Hasidim, they're always adding to religious observance and Torah Mesirat Nefesh, and to us, it's always less. So a good yontif for you, Tet Kislev, Chagorim Sameach, and Be'ezrat Hashem, we don't meet Sunday, but we meet Monday in health and happiness, Besorah Tovat, Olein Deval Kol Yisrael, Das V'danya.